And good evening, I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan.
Welcome to Consider This, the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Tonight on the show, we're going to be looking at the latest developments in the management of the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, as of Monday, Putrajaya is no longer allowing entry into Malaysia for long-term pass holders from 23 nations that have recorded more than 150,000 cases of COVID-19. These countries include the US, the UK, India, Philippines, Indonesia, Bangladesh, Pakistan, and Saudi Arabia. And these are not general tourists, but long-term pass holders, meaning that they have an existing relationship with Malaysia. Some of these countries even share a border. Now, the other recent development, which might reveal a potential blind spot in our management of the pandemic, is the emergence of yet another cluster at a detention centre, the Benteng Lahad Datu cluster. To help us think through these issues, first up, we have joining us via Skype, Azrul Mohamad Khalib. He's the CEO of Gallen Centre for Health and Social Policy. Azrul, good evening. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. How do you understand the rationale behind the entry ban of these listed countries?
Well, the rationale that we've been told by the government is that because there are currently spikes in cases that are occurring in different countries around the world, and also a potential surge in cases due to the winter period. Therefore, this travel ban is therefore necessary to protect the Malaysian population from further spread of infection via imported cases. But the problem here is that this travel ban has serious repercussions that should be viewed with utmost concern. I really worry whether this is an own goal which will actually work against our efforts to rebuild the economy amidst this outbreak. And the reason being is that it comes with multiple issues besides just the COVID-19 threat. The business community is already worried that this will result in many of the employees being stuck outside the country, and it's further hampering business activity for no other reason than being the wrong nationality. And then there are also serious concerns on issues such as Malaysians with foreign spouses. And it has been more than 5 months, and for some it's even longer. And there's been forced family separation in the time of this pandemic, which is exerting a mental and physical toll on these women and children, and certainly irreversible trauma. So there are concerns now regarding citizenship, inability to register marriages, pregnancies which are coming to term with children being born and unable to be registered properly due to the spouse not being present.
Azrul, if I can interrupt you for the moment, you know, I understand, the implications beyond the health concerns. But if we focus on the health concerns itself and this idea that 150,000 cumulative number of positive cases, they're not necessarily people with active, this disease, but just positive cases, is sufficient as a marker for what a country might represent as a risk to us. Does that make sense to you? Because this is a cumulative number, this is not most recent numbers, and countries vary in size. India has over 1 billion in population, and then we have tiny countries with much less of a population.
We're trying to understand why this number was put about, but also we understand from the disease itself, it doesn't care what we did yesterday, it cares what we do today. And the cumulative numbers really don't represent that much more of a threat than what it is already today, meaning every country that has a case of COVID-19 could be very much treated equally, because that involves citizens coming into the country. So right now, when they say it's 150,000, as you say, it doesn't seem to make that much of a difference if it's between India or the United States, the UK, or some other. So it is right now more of a convenient number, I believe.
Well, what about, Azrul, what about our testing and quarantine measures? That was said to be the SOP to allow entry, right? Are those not enough? Are those measures not enough to allow for these long-term pass holders to re-enter Malaysia?
Well, I can tell you this. Let's put this travel ban into context, right? If it was implemented during the MCO period, at the very beginning of the year, it would be acceptable and necessary, because there were too many unknowns And it was important that we flatten the curve and buy time to ensure that our public health colleagues were able to prepare, respond, and treat cases as they come in. Today, we know more about COVID-19 as a disease, have those diagnostic tests that you just mentioned, and protocols for quarantine. So I would ask, you know, are they not adequate? Haven't they worked so far? And I express my confidence in our ability of our public health professionals, the Ministry of Health, to be able to do their jobs, to be able to help screen and quarantine these individuals who need to be if they want to re-enter Malaysia. I mean, let the SOPs work. Let these protocols work rather than adopt this fortress mentality.
Azrul, do you think the media is not asking the government enough tough questions?
Well, I certainly watch the press conferences when they come up, you know, and I always wonder, why are they asking this question? You know, I'm talking to the television set, asking they should be asking this and so forth, you know. But I think there needs to be a much more rigorous examination of the measures that the government has put into place. We don't want to second-guess the government for no reason at all. We want to be able to ensure that the right decisions are being made for the best interests of Malaysians. And I think the government itself has its heart in the right place. It's just a matter of ensuring that we're able to achieve that balance that we need, especially when we're trying to rebuild the economy.
Well, the other thing, Azrul, that another development has been the emergence of yet another cluster in a detention centre, the Benteng Lahad Datu cluster. And I'm wondering whether we have learned from the lessons from detention centres, whether there's something about the Lahad Datu District Police Station, Tawa Prisons, whether the environment of these detention centres make it likely clusters. Are these blind spots in our management of the pandemic?
You know, the detention center clusters are not unexpected. We've learned from other countries around the world which places are potential, which are vulnerable to outbreaks of COVID-19. And detention centers have been from the onset identified as such. Malaysia is not an exception. So in case we forgot, the COVID-19 clusters immigration detention facilities, such as Bukit Jalil, was due to persons being detained who were infected and brought into that environment. It is extremely hard to implement COVID-19 SOPs in detention facilities as they are confined spaces with limited spacing possible, with detainees mingling in close proximity to each other. I would say that each prison and detention facility in the country should be monitored and screened for COVID-19. And I would say, and I would estimate that there are many more such clusters that are waiting to be discovered.
Right, Azrul. So, you know, the media reported that the Director General of Health pointed to tightening border controls. That seems to be his takeaway from the Benteng LD cluster. But you're saying it's actually the institutions, in some sense, institutional failure to look at these detention centres. What really is the main thing that the government has to do right now?
Well, first of all, we have to move away from this mindset that this is more of an external threat. COVID-19 is in the community. There is already community spread of the virus, and the proof of that is looking at the number of unlinked cases that have emerged over the past month or so. We can see what's happening in Kedah, for example, all indicative that the outbreak is already in the community and managing it is key. So what is very important for us in order to succeed and to pull through this crisis, we need to make sure that the SOPs work for us, not against us. And adopting a fortress Malaysia mindset would be quite tragic because it would work against our best interests. So the institutions need to ensure that it recognizes that we are in a public health emergency, not a national security emergency. And the tone and messaging must be changed to adopt that approach, because right now we need people to cooperate, we need people to understand why they're doing their SOPs, and most importantly, to protect themselves and others from getting infected. You can't just expect people to mindlessly follow the SOPs without a clear understanding of why.
Azrul, thank you so much for speaking with us tonight. We really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your insights. We're going to take a quick break, but after this, we will be joined in the studio by Dr. Koh Swee Keng. He's one of the founders of the advocacy group Malaysian Health Coalition. That's all coming up in just a couple minutes. Stay tuned to Consider This.